Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. And I am profoundly, deeply moved that you are with me on this sixth day of July 2019. Hope you had a really nice 4th of July. Hope it was meaningful for you, whatever that is for you. Because we're going to talk about meaning today. Yes, what is meaning? I get emails from time to time, little questions in emails that I think are really interesting. And what does it mean, Greg, when da-da? What does it mean, Greg, when you say that? So I thought it would be fun to do a radio program, What Does It Mean? And we'll take a look at that. And I want to remind you what it means to me if you become a sponsor of Aspire, because this is the only way we can pay for our airtime and all of the things we do, such as my hospice work, my hospital work. There are some things you don't know about that I do. You don't need to know that are very time. They consume a great deal of time. But let me tell you, they're very, very important to do for human beings who need help, both physical and biological and financial. And we do everything we can to serve humankind in this way, in the essence of it all. So your donations, they pour out to people to buy clothing for kids in my Batmo project, all sorts of things. And if you're going to be of service to humankind, I hope that you will consider supporting Aspire and allowing us to do the work we do for not only you, the listening audience, but for many, many people who you may never meet in the flesh. You probably will never meet them, but we do all we can to help. If you're interested, go to the website at aspire.org. There at the top of the page, you will see that four-letter word, support. If you click on it, menu will come down and say, why support Aspire? And you can take a look at that, and that might answer a lot of questions about the significance of being supportive. What does it mean? What does the word mean? What is meant by the word, the concept of it, the whole thing is very important. It's about an implied or explicit significance, according to, I'll get my tongue working today, I only had one cup of coffee, implied or explicit significance about something, according to the dictionary. And I like that. I think that's a pretty good definition of what it means to have meaning in our life. And I truly feel that most people have very meaningless lives. The only meaning they have is in how their life pertains to someone else, either keeping them occupied in a marriage or a relationship, or raising their children and thinking that they're doing a good job, whatever. And then only finding out that deep within, they don't have the means nor the love to raise a child. It takes, you can raise a child to be social. You can raise a child to meet the criteria of this society. That doesn't mean that you've raised them well. It doesn't at all. Krishnamurti talked about that, about it doesn't mean anything to think of yourself as being well-adjusted in a society that is so mentally ill, and it is. So when you start looking at your life and the meaning and the significance of your life, what does it mean? What is contained in that meaning and significance? Is it something that is subjective to each of us? I don't think so. But we like to keep it that way. That way we don't get insulted. And people are always afraid of being insulted. It's all about, I don't like that. That's insulting. So sometimes you have to bear the brunt of that. At least I have found that to be true with myself. Let's go into the question. First one comes from Lisa. She does not tell me where she lives. What does that mean that my husband doesn't care about his family? At least not in the traditional sense. I worry that he doesn't love us, Lisa. Well, you ask me, what does it mean that my husband doesn't care about his family. How do you know? Maybe the level of what you call care isn't the same as what he calls care. It's subjective. I don't know what it is. How can I know? I've never met this man. I don't know. But as always, communication is very important. And I think we marry people in one posture and live with them in another. And oftentimes the person we married isn't the one we live with. If you can understand that, if you can be aware of that, it could change a lot of things in your life. You could have a lot of compassion, at least some empathy, for what it takes for your husband to live with you. I always ask this of my students and my counselees that I work with. What is it you put your husband through or your wife through in order to love you? What do you put them through? And if you ask that question of your husband, if you had the courage maybe to ask that question, maybe that would be something quite profound for you, something deeply helpful. What do I insist upon that you don't like, or whatever that is that you're going for? If you can look at that, if you can listen to that, if you can open up a conversation where it doesn't turn into fighting or feeling like, you know, he wasn't fair or he doesn't love me or whatever, you might be able to find the meaning and the significance of what you're looking for here. What is it that makes it possible in your mind to be with your husband? What are you looking for? What was the initial meeting all about? Why did you get married? Look at it. Now, I don't know if your husband doesn't seem to care about his family. I don't know if that's true. Men are different than women. For women, the family is everything. That's in your DNA. Deep inside the genetic nature, the DNA of you, is this gene inside of you that wants to make babies and then take care of them and be efficient, so these babies can eventually go out and earn a living and take care of the parents. That's really deep inside all of us in our DNA. But we don't like to admit that because that sounds a little self-serving, but it is true. And for some people, doesn't sound self-serving. It sounds logical and reasonable. This is the way it should be. This is the way it is. But if you really look at what I'm saying to you here and I'm suggesting to you, you'll begin to understand a little bit about maybe your husband had this impression as to what would marriage be, and now he finds that it might be a little different here. His chemistry has changed. The level of his testosterone, I can guarantee you, has changed. Maybe he's just unhappy with his job, or maybe he's very happy with you and you don't even know it. Maybe he's just thrilled with being married to you and it just doesn't look like that to you because you're insecure or you're not, you're on a different chemistry level than he is. It's, you know, when we meet another person, the chemistry has to be right. You've heard that, and it's very true. The chemistry in your body and his body has to click. They have to be at a certain pinnacle before you're even interested in them. And if somebody doesn't trigger that chemical, that pinnacle for you, then you're going to find that you're not that interested in them or they're not that interested in you. And there's nothing you can do about it. There's absolutely nothing you can do about it. When the chemistry is right between two people, and the estrogen and the testosterone are firing off in the right positions, and the synapses are firing off in the right positions, and the dopamine is working in your body perfectly. One of my former students used to call it when the elves came out. That's when you think you're in love. That's really about all there is to it. And then if you start to diminish in your chemicals, which you're going to. You inherited certain genetic dispositions and chemicals that start to diminish. So will your quasi-love. And now you start looking at it from the point of view of, well, what did I see in this guy? Or what did I see in this gal? And now I'm starting to wonder if I really love them. Or in the grind of trying to survive and have a life in that grind is very, very difficult for a lot of people. So there's your issue. There it is in a nutshell, Lisa. So I would suggest, and I've never met him, so what the hell do I know? You sit down with him and you have a conversation and you see where it's at. But listen to me. Try not to take it all personally. Try to understand that the way you were is not the way you are. And what was isn't maybe what is. And can you reheat a souffle? I don't know. I've never been able to reheat a souffle. And I'm not fooled anymore by the body and its chemicals. So I suggest you not be either. Please forgive me. Namaste. Probably not what she wanted to hear. She probably wanted to hear it's all his fault and he's a jerk. Okay, the next question is from Anne. She does not tell me either where she lives. What does it mean that I'm not always afraid? That's a beautiful thing, Anne, that you're not always afraid. I admire that. Most people live in a tremendous fear all the time. They're afraid of everything. They're afraid they're not going to get what they want. They're afraid they are going to get what they want. They're afraid that they're going to hear news they don't want to hear. They're also afraid of not hearing the news they want to hear. You know, it's just blah, 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 blah. The mind just turns everything upside down, inside out. Fear is relative only in the human context to a person's ignorance. The more ignorant I am, the more I'm afraid. What is my ignorance? Well, it's a justified self-righteous self-preservation modality that I get into. And when I allow myself to get into that modality, I start to develop within myself some really ugly traits. Traits about what is right and wrong and good and bad. The fact that you say you're not afraid, you're not always afraid, what does it mean that I'm not always afraid, might indicate that your soul is sticking out a little bit. And you might be finding out that there is a state of being within you that is absolutely beautiful. This soul is the state of what most people would call God. This soul is the essence of your entire being, your entire life, everything that is important. The fact that you feel this state of the soul is an extremely important discovery inside yourself. And never give it up, not for one single moment. Live in the soul. Live in the heart. Live in the realm of kindness and compassion. Be immensely forgiving. Be willing to make recompense for your life in the past. Be willing to give and forgive constantly. Now, you will know when you forgive. It is not a difficult thing. Forgiveness, when it is authentic in us, results in a deep and profound state of generosity. When you feel deeply generous, so generous that you would give away the farm for the sake of this forgiveness. You couldn't give enough for the state of this forgiveness. That your mind is absolutely, and emotions are freaking out because you're even considering this kind of generosity, then you know you've forgiven. This is why people can't forgive. And this is why most people are afraid. And good for you. You're not afraid. You're not afraid to have the experience that moves beyond the ideals, maybe of your humanity. I don't know. I am just sitting here kind of working on this in myself about you, because rarely, and I mean rarely, do I ever hear someone talk like this. That's why I chose your question. It is unique. It is wonderful that you don't feel fear. And if that is the case, then wonderful. But if the case is that you're extremely arrogant and you think you have nothing to fear, and your life, shall we say, is padded by maybe good fortune or some kind of wealth, and you think there's nothing to fear. Now, that is artificial, and that's an entirely different point of view. I can't tell you how false that one is. I know a lot of people who think they're doing very well because they have the amenities of what we would call, let's say, a privileged life because of money. But I'm going to take you on my heart's value, what I would hope that you meant. But please understand that if this has to do with the whole idea of being privileged because you have money or because your life seems easy and you get to travel and do all the things that Anne wants to do, then that's another story altogether. So I don't know which one it is for you. I can't say, and I'm not going to guess because I don't do that. But I hope it's number one. I hope it's that you are starting to feel the presence of something greater than your body's genetics, and that you're looking at things from a more profound point of view rather than political, social, or religious, biological. You're looking past all that and maybe coming to a place where there is something unique happening to you. If there is, I congratulate you, and I say to you, go forward with it. Make it a lifestyle. Share it with others. Practice meditation. Work on yourself. Keep it going. Don't let this thing fall into oblivion. And let love, beyond all things, live you and become extremely generous. Thank you, Anne, for your beautiful question. It really was, and it's more of a statement, and I hope it's true. Namaste. The last question. This comes from Dawn in Colorado. What does it mean that I hate change? I just deplore it. Any little change annoys me, and I work very hard at keeping my life the same. Dawn. Dawn, welcome to the man's club. Men don't like change a lot, unless the change is in their favor in some way. But even then, it can't deviate too much, not too much, from what we're comfortable with or what we like. So you say, what does it mean that you hate change? It means that your genetics are playing out, your DNA is playing out, and it means that, you know, you don't want to grow. You think staying where you are, as you are, the way you are, is comforting to you, and that you shouldn't have to do anything more than what you're doing now. And with that being said, and with that being relative probably to your man disease, which is a part of this I don't want to change thing and I don't want things to change, you probably live your whole life trying not to, shall we say, expand or to flower, but to just hold on to what you have miserly and hang in there and hope that nothing changes, then that the meaning of your life will be something, shall we say, an explicit significance to sameness, which is what most of us men are about. You know, we like routine too. That's another thing that really, you break our routine, oh my God, we can get cranky. and nasty. So when you look at it from that point of view, when you're looking at it from that stance inside yourself, you can see that whatever it is that you are looking at and looking for, the meaningfulness of your life is never going to be found in trying to keep your life the same. We live, whether we like it or not, Don, in the state of the beloved impermanence of this world. This world is always changing, always unfolding. And the state of that change is usually kind of in the category of the collective and how the collective is feeling and thinking and what the majority of us are willing to do and what the majority of us are not willing to do. I don't think I've ever lived in the state of a history that we are in now where the submerged biological prejudice of skin color and people in general is more prevalent. I had no clueless idea about, you know, racial prejudice and fear and hate. I had no idea it had gone to the degree that we're in right now and that it could be capitalized on. So there you are. Everything is in a flux and changing. Is it always changing for the good? Is it always changing for the bad? What is it doing? Blah, 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 blah. It all depends on how you want to associate with it or how you want to merge with it or how you want to allow it to affect you. I say, stay true to your heart. Live in your soul. Want nothing with all of your heart, Don. Let other people have their opinions about you. And just let them run rampant in it. Do not add to their opinions. Do not counteract them. In your day, be open to anything that would bring a great love into your life. I mean, that's a really important thing, to bring love into your life. It's huge. And if you can be willing to do that, well, then any change that comes about could be something magnificent for you. So let your life unfold. And if you can't do that, just wait. Something's going to change, I guarantee you. One way or another, something is going to change. And when it does, don't be surprised. You may have to adapt to it. You may have to do things outside the box of your comfort zone. But if you're willing and if you're allowing in your heart, you can allow these changes to do some really wonderful things. I hope that helps you. I'm out of here. Please forgive me, Don. Thank you for listening. Namaste. Well, there we are, the first radio program in July. I'm at Mount Madonna. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. I'm coming home. I think I'm coming home. Anyway, I'm getting close to coming home. So I'm grateful for you being with me, and I'll be back on the air tomorrow morning. I look forward to being with you. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.